Blog Talk Radio.
Yay! Welcome to the show, everybody. I do like my new applause entry. My name is Golden Hawk. This is another reality show, and I am super duper excruciatingly delighted to be here tonight. We've had an amazing day on the East Coast. It was sunny. It was gorgeous. I had a great day, and I have a great show lined up for us, especially for all the friends of mine who are on Facebook who have been speaking about a lot of disorientation and kind of not knowing where to plant our feet. It's almost like we've been unplugged from one reality, but not yet quite plugged into the new reality. And my guest tonight has exquisite insider information. I mean, we really have, we've hit a gold mine tonight, my friends. So I'm not going to waste any more time. I want to introduce Paul Rademacher.
Rademacher.
Paul Rademacher, who is, he is the author of a book called A Spiritual Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe. A fabulous book. It's a wonderful book that it was a page turner, and the best part of all is it's a story about Paul's life in a very it's a delightful tale, even though it encompasses many things: the ups, the downs, the ins, the outs, the awakenings, and the asleep. It really is it's a beautiful story. I enjoyed it very much, and it talks about how Paul inevitably landed into the executive director position at the Monroe Institute. And I don't know how many people are familiar with the Monroe Institute, but the word hemisync has its origins from Robert Monroe, who is the founder of the Monroe Institute.
That's right.
And hemisync, we'll definitely talk about this more, you know, Paul, I'll let you, you know, go into it. But just as a brief, hemisync is a frequency technique where you can use it to create brain waves, specific brain wave patterns in the brain, which has come to be discovered that by creating brain waves, specific brain wave patterns in our brain, opens an awareness to other dimensions and realities. I used the hemisync many years ago when I first heard about it, because I am I delight in traveling interdimensionally. And then Bob Harris kind of took the hemisync and kind of structured it a little differently into holosync, and that just seemed to be, for me at the time, where I went. But I'll be honest with you, you know, Goldie's been finding some abundance lately, and I want to talk about the programs at the Monroe Institute tonight, because I think, at one point me and Paul are going to hug, and or at least shake hands, hopefully a hug.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I would like to inevitably, I think, start the path of becoming a Monroe Institute practitioner, or not practitioner, but, you know, I'm not quite sure what the name of it, but you take them in a certain order. Because it just helps us have a steadier ground on the shifting that's going on anyways in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
So where do we get? Okay, so first let's begin. Paul, if you can give us a brief description, or however brief or not you want, about starting from the point of, you know, coming into the director role at the Institute in, you know, how, because I would assume that means you know a lot about the Institute.
Well, you know, it is kind of my job, but I'm learning something every day. I can assure you, you know, the Institute's been around for a long time and has a lot of history behind it, and it's continuing to grow in many, many ways as we speak. And so I find that it's one of those things that has a life of its own, and most of the time I'm just kind of hanging on by my fingernails trying to keep up with what's happening, because it isn't just an institute. It's all the people who have come through the Institute, and we're making a real concerted effort these days to begin to tap into the tremendous resources that our graduates have. We have never done that in the past, and so we've opened things up in a new way where we're really trying to tap into this volunteer resource that we have, and I mean, it's just starting to grow in an exponential way because of that. You know, it's something there that I don't have any control over, and I don't think any of us on the board want to have control over it, because it's allowing marvelous things to start to happen.
Could you share some of that? Because you've already piqued my interest.
Well,
I realize that we're kind of starting at the finish line, so to speak, but
sure.
That's okay, because right, it's a holographic experience anyways.
Absolutely. You know, we'll get to where we need to go eventually.
Exactly. Even if we're hitchhiking.
Right.
Okay.
This kind of started with a study that was done with our graduates, that was done actually by one of our graduates several years ago, where he looked at what the long-term benefits of coming to our programs were. And this was a study that we had not commissioned. It was just something he was interested in doing. And he did an online survey that took about an hour to fill out, with lots and lots of demographic and psychological information. And he wanted to see if there was any kind of a long-term difference. And it turned out that there were many things that began to pique his interest enough so that he wanted to do a phase two of the study, which he's just completed recently. And by the way, the name of this guy is Cam Danielson. We owe him a tremendous debt of gratitude. Anyway, the upshot of his study was that it began to help us to understand that these differences in our graduates were something that maybe we had never really looked at before and never considered as ways in which we could begin to not take advantage of for our own sake, but to take advantage of for the sake of the planet, and for perhaps weaving together ways in which people might start to contribute on a more consistent basis, not just from an individual perspective, but more also from a collective perspective. So we're really looking at ways in which people can start to interact with each other on a self-selecting basis to begin to engage in various projects that might that they might develop, or that we might find for ourselves. But just to give you some idea of some of the differences in our graduates, one of the things that was discovered is that our graduates tend toward what Cam Danielson in his report called multiple intelligences.
Oh, I love it. Okay.
What he means by that is that imagine our work at the Institute that we do is we help people to experience for themselves, not just talk about or philosophize about, but experience for themselves what it means to move into non-ordinary states of awareness, non-physical types of experiences, and that kind of thing.
Right.
And you can imagine that if you go into these kinds of experiences from that direct personal perspective, one of the difficulties that you always encounter when you come back is trying to tell other people about it. The language that we have simply doesn't capture the experience in such a way that it can convey that experience to someone else. All we have
Absolutely.
Is metaphors that we can use that are tied to the physical world, and we can say, well, it was like this, or it was just as if you had done this, but those are not the reality. So what Cam means by multiple intelligences is we find that our graduates start to resort to many different forms of expression. For instance, they might start doing artwork, or they might move toward music or dance or gardening, or any way that they can begin to express this larger dimension of who they are, because if you move into these other dimensions that are non-physical, then you're faced with this possibility that you may be more than your physical body and more than your physical existence. So how do you begin to express that in the world? And multiple intelligences is one way that our graduates start to do that.
That's outstanding.
Right.
I was told once by a teacher, Renaissance is what will save the world. Like, it'll be a Renaissance movement. Yeah.
I agree with that. And I
think
it's hard. At the heart of the Renaissance movement, I think, is this flowering of the artistic sensibility alongside of the scientific sensibility that's been dominant for all these years,
Absolutely.
That will bring a much better balance to who we are as human beings, not just, again, from the physical perspective, but also from this multidimensional and multi-personality aspects of who we are. And I think that's kind of the hope for the future in many ways, and where we're heading as a species. So that's one aspect that he found. Another one is that our graduates have a much greater sense of guidance on a daily basis. If you move into these metaphysical realms, inevitably you're going to come up against these other intelligences that are influencing who we are and what we're doing. And so once you're opened up to that, then you kind of say, well, wait a minute. Now, this is something that is a regular part of my life that I've been ignoring all these years. How can I better begin to explore that and integrate it into my life? Another aspect that we see is a sort of a playfulness that many of our graduates display, and that's because, again, if the range of perception and life has been expanded pretty dramatically, and you know that physical existence isn't the only thing that we're here for, then you don't fear death so much anymore, and life begins to be a bit more playful. And another aspect is a much greater sense of compassion towards ourselves and to other people. And when you think about that, that's a tremendously important thing for the
world.
That's
a God quality.
Absolutely, absolutely.
In my personal
experience. Those are just a few of the things that were discovered as a part of what we're doing. And so we're looking at our graduates as being a bit different from the ordinary person. So we're starting to ask ourselves questions like, what can these people do if they were just given the opportunity?
Wow. So is it kind of like, I don't want to say job placement, but like creative placement, working, kind of side by side, the graduates as well as the institute, going, okay, now we're creating, the awareness when you're on multi-dimensional levels, there's not a whole lot of avenues, quote-unquote. Clearly the U.S. government isn't giving us a whole lot of avenues. On some levels, like movies do. I heard Avatar is like the new beginning of a media that is, starting to embrace our multi-dimensionality.
Right.
But, we can't all be, Steven Spielberg and all that. Not saying that that's not, might be for some of us, to direct movies, absolutely. But meaning that how do we take this into a practicality in everyday life where we can be multidimensional beings without being mocked or being scorned, saying, I put a quote on Facebook the other day, if you're one step ahead of the world, you're a genius. If you're two steps, you're a crackpot.
Right, exactly. And I think that, so I hear so many people talking these days about dissatisfaction in their jobs, a lack of meaning in their lives, a sense of unease or angst. And I think a lot of that is simply because, each of us has come into this world with a gift to give. And the problem is that we've entered into a time and a society that narrows the range of those gifts into something that's a very small slice of a very much larger pie, and we don't acknowledge those other aspects of the pie. And so if we come in with gifts and talents that move beyond the accepted norm, of course we're not accepted within society, and if we turn away from that leaves us kind of penniless from a spiritual perspective.
Right.
Because that's what we came to do, and when we don't get encouragement, and because we don't get encouragement, we often don't get find any lucrative means for approaching that. We do turn away from it, and it's often at a great detriment to ourselves.
I beautifully stated. I think everything right now, from the third dimensional point of view, if it's not profit based, is ignored.
Right. That's the dominant mode of our society right now. But I think over time, as more and more people begin to wake up to their true gift and their true potential, and they begin to have the courage to pursue that, then that's what's going to change the dominant shift of our consciousness.
Okay, so as a segue, does hemisync improve courage? Or induce courage? I'm not quite sure how to word that.
I'm not sure if that's the case. I think probably, if anything, it may turn up the level of angst as you feel is split between, even more keenly, between what you really want to do and what you're currently doing. And after a while, that level of discomfort gets so difficult to endure. You say, "Forget it. I'm going to go do what I want to do." And it isn't that you necessarily get the courage.
Okay.
You
right,
just can't
right.
turn away from it any longer.
Okay, so it turns up the awareness that when
yeah,
you see the,
right.
the clear polarity, you just simply, you know to choose for the soul because you know the soul exists. You've experienced it.
Right, right. And so you can't look at life anymore through that one-dimensional lens. And
right.
it's, I wish I could say that it always made life easier. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it makes it more difficult because you simply can't deny anymore or neglect what's the most important thing in your life.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, and you know, I've been, I don't mean to keep referencing Facebook. It just seems to be where my, from a conscious point of view, I'm having more interaction on Facebook lately than in the real, well, in the physical world, whatever. So that's my reference point. Anyways, what I have sensed lately is, I was speaking with Paul about this before the show started. We seem to be not wobbling, but warbling, which is maybe, you know, my, you know, brain is coming up with this or intuitively, because it seems to be we are, the dimensions are becoming more astute, but the navigation tools haven't quite yet, you know, necessarily, we don't have an understanding of the navigational tools.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think a lot of people are going through interdimensional experiences, you know, like I'll be having conversations. In fact, it's happened to me on the air a couple of times, and if it does, there's nothing I can do about it, where mid-sentence, I can't remember what I've just said. I mean, like the whole thought, the whole concept, it just vanishes, and I call it, okay, I must have just shifted into another dimension, and in this dimension, that concept doesn't exist. It's not playing with me right now, or it doesn't exist. And, you know, people I don't even think realize how fluidly we are changing, dancing in a multidimensional experience that, you know, it really does change reality. There's not a particle in the cosmos that is not feeling the shifting that we're going through.
Mm-hmm. And we're moving really from a world that we've known pretty well to something that is essentially unknown.
Oh, see how beautiful you say that. Very good.
Well, I don't know about that, but you know, anytime that happens at any level in life, there's always that period of what we call the liminal state, the state where the old is passing away, but the new hasn't appeared yet, and it's really a state of chaos. There isn't something that we can necessarily put our finger on, because if it wasn't new, then it would be part of our familiar world. So as we're moving away from the familiar, there is that period of chaos, and along with that comes, you know, a lot of uncertainty. And of course, none of us really like uncertainty, but in many ways, it's part and parcel of this time. And in fact, getting back to the original thing that we talked about, what another quality of our graduates is an anticipation of and a tolerance for these liminal states, these states of not knowing. You know, these are states that we normally try to avoid at all costs, but our graduates are a little bit strange. They've been through them enough to say, oh, wait, this doesn't make any sense. Oh, I wonder what's going to happen now. So there's a certain curiosity about it that you start to develop after a while that says, even if I don't know what's going on, maybe this is the beginning of something very, very interesting if I just hang in there.
Oh, Paul, I'm so glad we have that on, you know, on tape. Because that is, I think that is, for me, one of the most poignant points of this point in history. Because I feel like globally, because one of the things that HoloSync is so similar to HemiSync in that, you know, you keep putting in the frequency intentionally to go into chaos, knowing that it will pop into the next expanded state naturally.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it opinion, well, my personal opinion, that seems to be happening. Like, the frequency is getting raised on the planet, and like it does, you know, with the smallest grain of sand or the largest of universes, it takes it and you know, it starts scrambling it, and, you know, very naturally will pop it into another state. But, you know, there's no control when that pop will happen. It just kind of happens whenever, you know, the divine intelligence, you know, says it's time to happen. I mean, I'm not quite sure if science knows that tipping point, but what you just said about the graduates not being afraid of chaos, that one belief system alone can make this point in time in history more enjoyable, might I say, dare I say.
Well, yeah, it does give a context to some of what we're feeling, and it's really interesting when you look around the world and you look at our society, you can see people reacting in different ways to these changes. You know, on the other end of the spectrum, you have a lot of people who are really grasping for the old way, and
yes,
to the point where they're becoming militant about it. And underneath that is a real fear of something that they sense is coming, but they don't have words for it, they don't have a context for it, and so the only thing they know is to resist it at all costs. Mm. Then you have others who are simply unaware of it, and they just engage in various addictions to make sure that they're not feeling the changes that are happening. And then you have those who are aware of it, and then some who are actually starting to find ways to, as you say, enjoy it.
Right. Wow, you have a charisma about you, Paul, that is, you're an excellent speaker.
You really are,
on things not so easy to be spoken about.
It surprises me as much as you. I don't know where this comes from.
Well, listen, I'm just glad you're not just in the ministry anymore and that you're actually a world speaker. And I'm clearly glad that you're on my show because I love it. It's so simple. I tend to get a little wordy because I think I like to hear myself talk. That is really what I think it is. But I'm at least smart enough to have guests on who can say it clearly and it's precisely.
It's a pleasure to be with you. It really is.
Thank you. Okay. As a natural segue, and like I was telling Paul before the show, I've come into some abundance, and I'm very curious about the programs because, you have even some of these programs at home, but if you can for tonight, let's stay focused on the programs that you actually go to. You're located in Virginia, correct?
That's right. A little town called Faber, Virginia. That's Faber. But actually, I don't think that town exists because I've never been able to find it. I'm told there's a post office there somewhere, but I've never found the post office either. So don't really grab a map and think you're going to find Faber. But we're actually located about 25 miles southwest of Charlottesville, Virginia, which is right in the heart of, right in the middle of the state.
Okay. And it's the MonroeInstitute.org, or not the, www.monroeinstitute.org.
Yeah, it's right. But the name of the institute is actually the Monroe Institute. That's why we call it TMI.
Oh, I see. Okay. So, let's start. Well, let's start at the beginning. Before we do this, though, have you been through every program?
No. When I started becoming a residential facilitator there in 2001, I just didn't have the time to keep attending the programs. And the other thing that I found was that being a facilitator there and also now as an executive there, it's hard for me to disengage from those roles to really get into the ambiance of the program. So it's kind of my loss in a lot of ways because when I came there as a participant, it really is like entering into another dimension and another reality just being on the campus because
wow.
The world as you know it begins to just fade away into the background and you get opened up to entirely new ways of perceiving the world and perceiving yourself. But now if I try to take a program, I'm always thinking, you know, is that participant okay? Gee, I wonder if dinner's going to be on time. I wonder what's going to happen. You know, so it's very difficult for me to do that. But I have taken a number of the programs.
Okay, so because, anything that you're comfortable sharing from personal experiences, obviously, is welcome. And then, you know, I don't know how much participants or people have said yet you can share. You know, of course, whatever you can share to help them understand. Because what I'd like to know personally is the experiences you get, you know, from however many we cover. And, you know, as always, I'm going to, you know, put you on the spot. Hopefully you'll come back on the show again. So if we don't finish, we'll just pick up where we left off and, you know, continue our dialogue wherever that may be.
Sure.
Okay, so Gateway Voyage. That seems to be, that's kind of, you know, that was Robert Monroe's, if I'm correct, right?
Right, and that really is our introductory program. Most of our other programs have that as a prerequisite. Not all. There are some that you can take, like Shaman's Heart and Creative Flow, that don't require that gateway as a prerequisite, but most of the other ones do.
Okay.
So what the Gateway Voyage is structured around various destination points that we call focus levels. And these focus levels are simply designated by numbers because Robert Monroe wanted to have indications that didn't bias the participant beforehand or prejudge, help them to prejudge the experience. So he wanted something that was very neutral in these designations. So the first destination, and by the way, this is sort of like taking a tour in some ways. If you were to take a tour of the United States, you could go to different destination points, and that's kind of what we do in this program.
Okay. Well, that's exciting.
The first destination point, and these are all different aspects of awareness.
Okay.
First one is focus 10, which we call the mind awake, body asleep state. If you think for a moment, and if you're really paying attention to what it's like when you're just falling asleep or when you're just waking up in the morning, you're not really asleep and you're not really awake. You're in that in-between state where your body is deeply, deeply relaxed, and yet your mind is still kind of alert. That's what we call the focus 10 state. It's and for us, in many ways, it's a doorway into this area of consciousness that is different from ordinary waking reality, that allows you to start to explore areas that might be normally reserved for unconsciousness. So if you are paying attention when you fall asleep, you'll find that your body gets more and more relaxed and you're still conscious, and then all of a sudden you'll cross over this threshold where you will lose consciousness and you'll go into a dream world, or you go on to these exploits that are reserved for sleep, and then in the morning you come back out of that, you cross over that threshold again to waking awareness. And what we help people to do is sort of ride that line between wakefulness and sleep and begin to sort of explore that territory anew. So that's the first destination point in the Gateway Voyage.
I mean, that's the first. It's already awesome. Oh, my God. That's first. Okay, sorry. Goldie, go calm down.
Yeah.
Now.
Right.
Okay.
Well, and actually, you know, I think your enthusiasm is well deserved because Robert Monroe wrote three books, Journeys Out of the Body, Far Journeys, and Ultimate Journey. And in the early days in his work, that focus 10 state was the only one that they knew as a discrete form of consciousness. So many of his adventures came out of that first focus 10 state. But over
so
time,
it really is that, you know, in other words, you could just go to focus 10 and infinitely investigate.
Absolutely. And that's true of any of these focus states.
Indeed.
There's no way that you're ever going to be able to exhaust them. First of all, because they're infinite. Second of all, because if you visit one place one time and you come back to it a second time, you're a different person than you were the first time around.
Right. So it could never be. It's like you can't step in the same river twice. It would never be the same.
Perfect. Perfectly said. See how wonderfully you said that. That was great.
See, because the mind melding is happening, my dear Spock friend. Indeed. Ah, you're fabulous. Okay, so keep going.
All right, so then the second destination point that we take you to in the Gateway Voyage is what we call Focus 12, and that is the state of expanded awareness in which you can move into awarenesses that move beyond the awarenesses of the five physical senses and help you to just simply expand and explore what that means. The third place that we take you to is what we call Focus 15, and we call that the state beyond time, or the state beyond time and space. And then the final destination point that we take you to is what we call Focus 21, and that is the bridge state between physical reality and non-physical experience. So that's the scope of what we do in that introductory program.
Okay, so, and these are just questions coming in, so I might as well share them because maybe they're coming from the audience. Also, let me throw out the number, because you would be open to talking to a listener if they had a question direct, correct?
Absolutely. You bet.
Okay. Listeners, if you want to call in, and, you know, I will absolutely hog Paul all night, but I am willing to share. If you call in 646-929-2084, and hit the number 1 on your button so I know that you want to ask a question, come on the air and ask Paul a question about any of the, you know, the levels or programs, or share a personal experience, whatever you want to do. You're welcome to be a part of the show. Okay, so there's a level 15 is going beyond time and space.
Right.
And yet, is that the right number for that level?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
But the next level is non-physical and what?
We call Focus 21 the bridge state between the physical reality and non-physical reality.
So that is separate than time and space.
Now remember that the words never capture the experience, and they're only...
Right, okay, yeah, indeed, okay.
And in fact, when people are going, when all we're doing at the Institute is creating a context for exploration, and we never know what it is that anyone's going to find when they are moving into these different states. In fact, sometimes the way we do our program is that we'll set up an experience and we'll tell them basically what is going to happen on the exercise, and then we send them up to what we call the check units. These are check is an acronym for Controlled Holistic Environmental Chamber. Basically, it's a bed in a box.
Okay.
And you sleep in that box, in that bed at night, and you also listen to the experience via the headphones in that bed as well. And the bed is just designed to help minimize the outside distractions and create a dark environment if you want it. And, you know, it's closed off by a heavy curtain. And,
right.
But people can arrange it however they want. So we send them up to their check units, they go through the experience, and then they come back as a group, and if they want to talk about the experience, they can. One of the interesting things that we find is that sometimes people will actually jump to other focus levels that we haven't been to yet, and we as facilitators know by their descriptions what they're describing, but they don't necessarily know. And
wow.
We don't tell them that until we actually go to that experience. So you don't know necessarily what's going to happen with people. In fact, most of the time we have no idea. And that's what makes this work so infinitely fascinating, because we have come to understand and know that everybody who comes to the Institute comes with their own particular guidance that is providing for them exactly what they need. And I'm so glad, and we're also glad, that it certainly doesn't depend on us as facilitators to figure that out.
Right.
We trust completely the genius that is behind everybody.
Yeah, hello. That's amazing. Okay, question. Can you share an experience, a personal experience, from either level 15 or level 21? That would, like,
yes.
Without getting too personal, because... I realize this is really, I would imagine, I was once told that as we awaken to ourselves to know ourselves as God, it's not that we're going to become all powerful, it's not that we're going to become omnipotent, it's going to be one of the most personal experiences we've ever had.
Right, right.
Because God is really about the going personal, deeply, as opposed to having others love us, or knowing the answer for your neighbor's problems. It's really about getting to know self at a level that you understand that you are one with everything. But that's okay. I want to hear your stories. I know my stories. Let me hear your story.
Well, you touched on something that I think is pretty important, though, and I don't want to lose what you just said.
Okay.
Because one of the things that tends to happen is that when people go through our programs, they do end up knowing more of their total self. Mm. It's a very, very key thing. If you think about the perennial wisdom, it's always been know thyself. And if you're not engaged in that kind of exploration, that admonition doesn't really mean that much. But once you start down that path, you begin to realize how incredibly profound that really is, because there is so much to explore about who we really are. And it's such a – I think it's pretty sad that for most people they don't explore that, and they're missing out on this truly amazing, wonderful – mind-blowing experience and exploration that is part and parcel of what it means to be human. And that's why this work is so engaging for all of us who do it, is because we get to watch people who engage that very question of knowing their total self. So
That's hot.
Prelude. You had asked me a question about my own personal experience, and I want to throw in a caveat here.
Okay.
And that's that. I want everybody to understand that this is just my experience. It probably is not going to be typical of anybody else's experience. In fact, after I get done talking about these things, it's probably better if your listeners forget everything that I've said and just go, and if they have an interest in this, if they come to the Institute, forget about everything I've said and just go with an open mind.
Thank
because
you.
Everybody's experience is going to be so wildly different from one another. Okay.
Okay, and so we're not diminishing anything by sharing this experience?
No, and
so if that is what's happening, then, you know, okay, because I would call you either personally, you know what I mean, or just because I would never want to do that. My intent is always for expansion, never for,
no,
you know.
I take responsibility for myself on this, not a problem.
Okay.
Some of these things that I've related in my book. So let me just talk about one I think that was really one of the most compelling things that happened to me when I was there in my first program.
Okay.
I mentioned Focus 21. And Focus 21 is, that bridge state between physical reality and non-physical reality. And I remember the first time that we went there. Again, we go as a group, even though we're lying individually in separate beds and boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find myself flying over this city of light, and it's like nighttime, and I remember it pretty vividly because there were these three huge arches, and it was next to this large body of water, and the light was kind of shimmering off the softness of the water, but it was a city landscape. It was so fascinating because the buildings themselves seemed as if they were alive. They were beautiful beyond words, and they were almost luminescent, as if they were glowing from within. And so you didn't have neon lights or incandescent lights at all. It was as if the very structures themselves were glowing in some way. And that's why I called it the City of Light.
Mm.
And I was just absolutely stunned by the whole thing. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And so I was like a little kid. And I wanted to see the whole thing as much as I possibly could because I knew we were going to have to come back at some point.
Mm.
So I go into this one, like a cathedral, and I'm rushing down through the center of what look like pews on either side, and I come up to the very front of the cathedral, and there's this being of light, and I can tell that, you know, I know that this is going to be one of those really life-changing moments. And I look at this being of light, and I say to him, you know, I really think that I probably should want to stay here and talk with you because I know this is going to be a changing, pivotal moment of my life, but I really want to see the city. So I rushed out, turned around, and went running back out into the street.
And that's the beauty of it, though. It's free will, as it is. You know,
right.
You can make that call. Indeed,
that's
indeed.
Right. And I was just like, I didn't want to miss anything. So I go into another building, and it's like this big amphitheater and filled with people of light. And one of the beings of light is standing next to me, and he says, "Welcome. We've been waiting for you." I said, "You've been waiting for me? Why would you do that?" He says, "Because what you're doing is really important to us." I said, "How can that? Well, you know, I really should probably stand here and talk with you about this, but I really want to see the city." I go running out again.
You are definitely like a little kid.
Oh, absolutely. But I should say that before I left, though, I noticed there was another woman there who I didn't recognize, but she was not a person of light, and she was like a normal human being. But I didn't even want to stick around to see that, so I go rushing back out, visited a few other places, and then it's time to come back.
Okay.
Now, when we come back as a group, right, and people are free to share their experiences. And a woman across the circle from me raised her hand, and she says, you know, I went to this place that's a city of light. And she goes on to describe a lot of what I saw. I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, did everybody go there? But nobody else mentioned it. So finally, toward the end, I raised my hand, and I said, you know, I went to the city of light, too. And the woman from across the room looked at me, and she says, yes, I know, I saw you there.
So this really is space or... Well, I guess not space. What would you?
There must have been some objective form to that experience, and it was my first indication that such a thing was possible. Because up till then, it's like, oh, well, you know, nice imagination, that's fun, but you know, is it reality? But
right.
What helped to even cement it more was after that session, we were going up to our next experience at Focus 21. And a woman in the group sort of pulled me inside, and she says to me, I want to go to the City of Light, too. And I said, okay, I'll take you. I didn't have any idea how to do that. I was sort of half-joking when I did. But
right.
We go into this experience, and then all of a sudden, her face is right in front of me. And I go, oh, that's right. I was supposed to take you with me. And so I grabbed her hand, and we went flying up into the ether, and then we're flying over the City of Light. And I let go of her hand and said, you can explore on your own. I got things I want to do.
Right, right.
When we come back, we're coming down to the group again, and I spotted her, and I said, I took you to the City of Light, didn't I? She said, yeah, and you practically tore off my arm.
You don't know how strong you are when you're not in body. Wow.
And I said, and then I let you go. And she said, yeah, I know. I had things I wanted to explore, too. And so another indication that there's something there that is different from ordinary imagination, something that has an aspect of realism that is very, very intriguing.
That's an awesome story, yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
Sure, glad to.
Okay, wow. Okay, so and now the first one, let me get back to that. Gateway Voyage is 6 days?
Right, we start on Saturday afternoon and then leave on Friday morning.
Okay, and how many hemisync experiences take place in those 6 days? Do you know?
You know, I think I probably would rather not say that because I don't want to...
Does it vary?
No, it doesn't vary very much, but I don't want to set up expectations for people. I think it's much better if they go into this without worrying about schedule and without worrying about...
Okay,
time.
You're actually speaking directly to me. It's me asking these questions.
Okay.
No schedule, Goldie. Okay. Because I'm getting the sense from by the way you're talking that it really is. It's almost like the minute you step on the ground, it's going to be an experience that whether I'm hemi-syncing or not.
Right. Many people who come to our programs, the minute they've set foot in the Nancy Penn Center where we hold most of the program,
mm-hmm.
they will say I had this strange sense of coming home,
as if
this is where I've been before, and when the group comes together, they realize that there's a supportive environment that they can talk about anything. It doesn't matter,
exactly.
And they've got it's like a family that says, okay, that's cool, you know, and things they would never dare to tell anybody else, they know that they can talk about in this group.
Mm, that's a beautiful statement because this planet so needs that, really.
I
say that from the bottom of my heart. This planet needs that because we are multidimensional beings and we should be able to speak of that without the mockery and, you know, just to
Absolutely.
Be supported by through just acceptance. It's not even – nobody has to believe us. Just accept it that we feel this or we've experienced this and – That's a really powerful thing. So
One of the things that we found has been very important, in addition to the actual technology, is the creation of a very, very safe environment, very safe space where people feel like they can ask any question that they have, that they're supported as they move into these awarenesses that may be new, and because of that, they might be a little bit nervous about that.
Absolutely.
Also, so the support from the group itself, it's very interesting to watch because you get all kinds of different personalities to something like this. Hmm. And by the way, we have a very good balance between male and female. I think it's because what we do is attractive to this, to the feminine psyche, but we also have this technological sort of scientific component that's attractive to the male psychology as well. Not that those are the only psychologies that males and females have, but it does seem to create a safe space for both genders, and we work very hard at that so that people have a real sense of comfort about what we're doing.
Outstanding. I mean, that... Mm-hmm. That is an enlightened protocol, so to speak, because being enlightened is a beautiful thing. But when we're first coming into it, it's scary. It's the unknown. It's multi dimensions. just because we've been it and we're just becoming aware of it doesn't mean we're comfortable yet in it, because we haven't remembered this for many, many lifetimes. So I honor that. I'm all about the safe space. So I don't always necessarily create that on my own. I get cranky sometimes. But
do you? Oh my gosh.
Well, just in my own experience.
Don't tell me you're human.
Oh, good answer.
I thought I was talking to a goddess here. What happened?
Well, I come in and out.
Oh, you mean just like the rest of us.
Exactly. Right. Namaste. Thank you for that.
Be human.
Okay. Indeed. No. Okay, so but I'm excited. Okay, so guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
As the next program.
Right, right. Most of the work in guidelines is done in Focus 21. And as the name implies, the program is designed to help people to get in touch with their inner guidance or their inner self-helper, is what we call it, the ish. And you can call it any name, different names that you want. Take whatever system you want. It doesn't matter to us. And there's one thing I forgot to mention before is that part of the safety that we help to create for people is that we take a very neutral perspective on belief systems of any kind.
Mm.
And even though the book that I wrote comes out of my effort to connect what I think Jesus was doing from a mystical perspective with what we do at the Institute, that's my own personal perspective. And so we take but we work very hard to be very neutral in regards to all of that, so that we don't have any dogma that we ask people to believe. We simply ask them to consider one possibility, that they might be more than their physical bodies, but we don't try to tell them what that more is. We want them to find out for themselves. And so rather than us pretending like we're gurus and that we have the answers, which we don't, all we do is try to create a context in which people can explore for themselves their own inner guidance and their own inner guru, so that they learn to trust these moments of intuition that come to them, or that they learn to access guidance that's available to each and every one of us every day of the week, every minute of the day. So guidelines is designed to help people move into that process more deeply. So in addition to getting in touch with the inner self-helper, we also have an individualized session in our laboratory with a monitor in which you can go through an experience at your own pace and in conversation with the monitor while you're doing it. So it's very,
oh, wow,
very individualized. Yeah, that's the only program that we do that, because it's very labor-intensive from a staff perspective. As you can imagine, if we have 24 people in a guidelines program, getting 24 people for an individualized session that might last around 2 hours by the time you have a pre-interview, do the session, and the post-interview,
right,
that's a lot of staff
absolutely
time.
Absolutely. Wow.
But
in other words, you're speaking during out loud during
right.
the experiences, so you are kind of really in this world as well as potentially any other world.
It's really a nice skill to have when you think about it, because normally if we dip in and out of these altered states of awareness, it's not something that we normally choose. It's not something that we intend. We just get carried along and, you know, we drift with a thought that takes us into a past experience, or
right.
we start worrying about some future event. Or, but to learn to access these other states of awareness on a more consistent basis and in a more controlled basis can be a very effective skill to have. And so that what we do in the guidelines program helps people to learn to do that more effectively.
So do people have experiences after leaving the Monroe Institute?
No, everybody dies after the Institute. So they're,
I guess I didn't word that very well.
Skills that we incur are just staggering.
Well, do they have level 21 experiences? Is it, in other words, once you make the bridge by doing it and consciously, is it now available to you spontaneously?
Yes. In fact, that's one of the things we try to help people to do in the first program, in the Gateway Voyage. I shouldn't say this, but we help people to at several points along the way to throw away the training wheels and to access these states without the hemisync technology.
Right.
Bob Monroe was a very practical guy, and so he always wanted to have a practical component to these extraordinary explorations. So he thought, well, you know, if you, let's say you're in a board meeting and you need to access guidance, you know, it's a little awkward to tell your board of directors, I've got to leave the room for 45 minutes and lay down and put some headphones on, and I'll be back with an answer for you. But it's much more convenient if you can immediately move into an altered state and come back and share what you've been able to experience. You know, one of the things, I work with Skip Atwater, who's the president of the Institute. He has been the research director for some 20 years previous to becoming the president. And one of the great, really wonderful treats of working with him is he and I will be in a deep conversation about any kind of issue, and then after all at once I'll kind of watch him and his eyes will drift away and he'll get quiet. At first I was thinking, what, is he falling asleep, and you know, should I wake him up? What gradually I began to realize that what's happening is he's actually listening to another source of information.
Wow.
And I've gotten to the point where I've really begun to treasure when I see him doing that, because I say to myself, oh, boy, here it comes. This is going to be good. I wonder what he's going to come up with now. And it's a really wonderful thing to watch, and it's such a great example, I think, of the potential that we have as human beings to tune into different states of reality at our will once we learn how to do it.
Rock and roll. I support that wholeheartedly. Indeed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So to get back to your question, I, even though I was kidding with you, we do hope that our graduates will practice these skills once they get home. And it's just like anything else. The more you practice, the more consistent it becomes, and the more valuable it becomes for you as well. But we also give them some hemisync support that they can take home with them so that they can continue in the daily practice as much as they can.
Outstanding. Outstanding. I just I've been recently watching a gentleman. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, Alex Collier.
I'm not familiar with that.
I actually wasn't familiar with him either, and which surprised me. But well, to make a long story short, he's been in touch with Andromedan since he's 8 years old. And the reason the why I bring him up, I mean, he's fascinating. If you ever, and I'm sure you're a very busy person, but if you ever have time, he's on Google. I mean, on
what
YouTube.
What's his name again? Can you say it one more time for
Absolutely.
Me?
Absolutely. Alex Collier, C-O-L-L-I-E-R.
All right.
He's been around for a good 20, 30 years. Very, very grounded. But the thing that what the Andromedans have been telling him basically since day one, technology of any kind, and this is cell phones, computers, hemisync chambers, holosync, we can do this all without that.
Right.
We can do all of our creation. We don't need big trucks to move mountains. We don't need drills to get water from the ground. All of this is we're coming to the space of expansion where life will show us that because we're really very, very powerful, not to overpower, but very powerful creative beings. Every single human being on the planet right now has these capabilities lying dormant. They've been conditioned out of us. And what's beautiful, of course, is the Monroe Institute is literally, tickling these dormant talents that are, because he's like, the Andromedans have them, but don't worship the Andromedans. So do the humans. We don't remember that we have them. And the
right.
Monroe Institute is clearly, because I would imagine there must be galactic interludes on some of these adventures in the chambers.
Oh yes, absolutely. And I don't want to go into detail about that too much, but
indeed.
Some of our programs, actually, we do have a program called Starlines in which people can begin to access some of these galactic experiences in particular, both Starlines 1 and Starlines 2. And there's a series of programs that have to be taken before you can get to that point.
Okay.
But that doesn't preclude those kinds of experiences happening at any point along the way because people are not prisoner to the various stages or the various destinations that we take them to. In fact, we want people always to feel like they can override anything that we're doing at their discretion and follow anything that may be of interest to them. Again, we really want people to be their own guru and to really trust what's going on inside of them. If there's one thing I think that we would hope people would come away from our programs with, it's a sense of their own personal responsibility for doing what it is that they really want to do. And trusting their own intuition.
You just have no idea how divine your words are. It's aho, as the Native Americans would say whenever something was said that they just wholeheartedly agree. It was aho, and I am so with you, Paul. I mean, we're just dancing a divine dance. It's exquisite. It's exquisite.
Oh, thank you. But a lot of that's because of what we do at the Institute. It's not something I've created or, I just happen to be in a position at the Institute where, that I never dreamed of, and I don't want to in any way take responsibility for that aspect of things. I think I've benefited so much from what we do that I'm here tonight simply in gratitude for that, and if something good comes out, that's great.
You're beautiful. Your humility is endearing. And I honor everything you just said, but from my perspective, you have absolutely helped create this program tonight.
Well,
if you didn't call that phone, I would not be having the good time I'm having right now. Nor would my listener. Even though, believe it or not, I want to tell you this. Not believe it or not. I wanted to share with you that on several occasions sometimes my guests will just not show for whatever the reason. It's something that you just deal with any kind of live media.
Right.
And so I finally figured out, okay, I should have a show downloaded, so that when I get the call 30 seconds before showtime, Goldie, I can't make the show tonight, instead of scratching my head and going, I, at one point I was actually making phone calls to friends, talk to me, I'm on the air. I downloaded our last show. I had all these shows
cool.
to choose from, and I went, no, I want Paul's show because we rocked it last time. And yes, so you were the show I picked as, the clutch show.
Oh, great. I'm glad to hear that. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
My pleasure. You have a tremendous radiance about you without even trying, just being authentic. It is a tremendous radiance.
Now, the problem here, I'm going to have to squash my head back into its normal space. You've got it so big right now. And if I walk out there and my wife sees me right now, she's just going to walk out of the room because she won't be able to take it.
No, I'm telling you, she's going to put her sunglasses on and she's going to take it.
We've been married far too long for that, I'll tell you.
Yeah, but see, the beautiful part of heavy sink is, you can make it a new experience every night.
Right.
Okay, okay. Enough of us being silly. Okay, lifeline. We didn't just do that one, right? We did guidelines. Right?
No, we did guidelines. And let me back up and say that usually when people go through the Gateway Voyage, normally, not always,
okay.
And they're certainly not compelled to, but most of the time they're either going to go to the guidelines program or the lifeline. The most common sequence would be to take the Gateway Voyage guidelines and then lifeline. I took lifeline as my second program there. And what Lifeline, let me kind of give you the background on how that was created and why it was created.
Okay.
When Robert Monroe was doing his experiences in the laboratory, you know, when you came to visit Robert Monroe at his home, you didn't necessarily get a cocktail put in your hand and small talk. You wouldn't be there just for a few minutes before you knew it. He'd be leading you down a dark hallway and putting you in a dark room and slapping headphones on your head and whispering to you over the microphone. Saying,
he's a guy after my own heart, though, Paul. I would have loved to have known him.
Oh, I think maybe you did at some level.
Indeed, indeed.
he started gathering this group of people around him that he called his explorers. And they would do different tasks of going out and exploring the universe and seeing what they found out.
Mm.
At some point in that, and I don't want to give away the whole story, they began to experience people who apparently had died and yet were not aware of it.
Mm.
And so they found themselves still living their lives as if they were still in physical reality and because they didn't know that they were dead, there wasn't any sense of movement to the next stage of their development.
Mm.
Or they may have died and because of various addictions or fixations may still have been gravitating toward a particular person or situation that had captured them. Or they may have gotten bogged down in some kind of belief system. And each of those places were kind of stuck points, even though they didn't have a sense of being stuck because they didn't even know they were dead to begin with.
That's almost so bizarre that it's hard to grasp.
Yeah, I know it is. As I was telling somebody else, you know, when you talk about this stuff, let me back up. A few months ago, I was doing a program for a Presbyterian group down in Orlando, Florida. And they were asking me about the programs, and we got to the Lifeline program. And as I'm beginning to, as I'm describing it to them, I go through this sort of split, you know, and there's the person that's going, yeah, blah, 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 this and that about the Lifeline program.
Right.
And then there's this other part of me that's looking from the outside going, you're saying that? What? Are you crazy? Church, what's wrong? And so I began to realize that, you know, when you talk about this stuff, if you haven't gone through it, it really is crazy talk.
Well, no. So wait, let me be clear. First of all, I trust and have a knowingness. I think part of it is I've been holistic thinking for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I have my own awarenesses that I've done in a dream state and or
right.
Other dimensional. What I was saying is crazy is how unconscious the being must be to be non-physical and yet not know you're non-physical. You know, in the astral plane, that to me is like, well, that's deeply unconscious.
Well, you know what? What's interesting, there's a movie that was done a number of years ago starring Nicole Kidman that's called The Others.
Yes, yes.
Amazing job of depicting exactly that reality.
Okay.
You don't know it till the end of the movie. And if you haven't seen it, go and rent the thing. You got to see it because it's just amazingly done.
Yeah.
And it will bring what I'm talking about into a perfect perspective for you. So when Robert Monroe and his explorers started having these experiences, he began to think, well, maybe there's something we should be doing to help this. Because when they would get into these situations, they were sort of guided to help these people move on to the next stage of their destination. So
awesome.
The Lifeline program was born out of that need and out of that sort of prompting by the spirit, who knows where this stuff comes from. to help people to experience the reality of what I'm just talking about, and then training them to help those people who want to be able to move, to become aware of their changed existence, and to move on to whatever the next step might be for them. And so, in the Lifeline program, in addition to repeating the focus levels that I mentioned before, we also go to focus 23, which is this sort of limbo in between state where people can hang out when after they're deceased, and some of them know of it, some of them don't. We go into focus 24, 25, 26, which we call the belief system territories. It's very interesting that each of us has a belief about what's going to happen to us when we die.
Right.
Every belief system that you can possibly imagine on planet Earth that's been dreamed up by anybody on throughout history is represented in this, what we call these belief system territories.
Wow.
And then focus 27 is what Robert Monroe called the park. And that's a destination point where you can take people and they're then sort of gathered up and guided on their next part of their journey. And there are many different things that can be explored in Focus 27.
Outstanding. Now, didn't Robert talk about that in the books?
Yes.
Because I remember back in, I think, 2003, which is when I was maybe it was before that, but I remember I was hemi-syncing and I was reading the books, and I remember saying to myself, I would love to help people that are trapped interdimensionally and free them. I remember saying that, and now here we are, you know, a mere 7 years later talking about it as a total reality.
Yeah, it's funny how life comes full circle. If you get a little twinkling at one point in your life, you never know how much that's going to come back to you
exactly.
In ways later on. You know, I can talk about an experience that I had related to this, if that's all right with you.
I would love it.
This is something that actually happened to me in my gateway, and this is before I took the Lifeline program.
Hmm.
My father died of Alzheimer's in 1992. Is it 1992? No, it was 1990, excuse me. And the night that he was passing away, I was at his bedside. And with Alzheimer's, there are these moments of being lucid, and then these other moments in which he didn't even know we were there. He wasn't really conscious of the physical world. Some people think that in Alzheimer's, what's actually happening is that you're sort of making preliminary trips to the world beyond and then coming back. And that's
what I've heard, yes.
Yeah, going on with dementia. And so I was at my father's bedside, and there was just this split second in which he seemed to be lucid. He didn't say anything. I could kind of see it in his eyes. And I said to him, "Dad, if you go to the other side, will you come back and tell me what it's all about?" And he just, for a moment, there was a little glimmer in his eye as if to say yes.
Hmm.
Well, 7 years after that, I'm at my gateway program, and we go to focus. Gee, I don't even, this wasn't even focus 21, I don't think, because it was earlier in the program. And I'm moving through this space, and all of a sudden I look to my left, and I see a group of people of light gathering in a circle. And I almost went right by them, and I go, wait a minute, what's that? Well, light. You don't see that every day. So I thought, well, I better go over and investigate. So I go over and I look over the shoulder of one of the people of light, and I see that there's this person at the bottom of the circle just kind of lying there completely exhausted. Mm. And the only way I can describe it is this: it was as if he was a fish that had been landed in the bottom of a boat after a long and arduous fight, and it was just in its last, hanging on to the last moments.
Mm.
So
wow.
That was the quality of this person.
Excuse me.
And then all of a sudden, I realized that this person was my father. And the circle kind of parted, and instinctively I picked him up, and I started walking with him and holding him in my arms because he was really frail at that point in time, very light. And I started telling him, "Dad, you know, you're going into another world that's going to be wonderful and beautiful. And after a while, there will be people who will come, and they'll take you to your next destination." I don't know how I knew all this. It was just instinctive. And
sure
after
you are,
a while, definitely. After a while, then one of the people of light came back to me and said, "We can take him now. You've done a great job, and he can move on. His family is coming to get him." And so, you know, that was in my gateway experience. And boy, I'll tell you, when I came out of that, I was absolutely in tears, because I was beyond anything that I could have possibly imagined at that point. And what a gift to be at your father's bedside the night he dies, and then 7 years later to be welcoming him into the world beyond.
That is exquisite. That's the kind of gift that, you know, kind of really helps us see from the soul perspective. You know what I mean? The depth of who we are with our families. And I don't know. I get a real sense of, you know, like there's a deep connection between, and family, not necessarily even just being blood. You know, all of us is brothers and sisters. And because you took Lifeline. So have you helped? And you don't have to speak of it if it's personal, but have you helped other souls move on?
Yes, but, you know, that wasn't the most compelling aspect of the program for me personally. Mind you, I'm taking this program when I'm still a Presbyterian pastor, and I'm going off to the Monroe Institute, and I am not telling anybody about it.
Yeah, this is a little bit of a double life kind of thing.
Absolutely. I had three kids to support and a wife, and
yeah.
I wanted to hang on to my job, and so, you know, I had to kind of...
I'm sorry, just my visual of that was literally of you hanging out a window, hanging on to your job.
Well, that's a very accurate depiction of the way it felt, because, you know, my heart and soul were moving in other directions, and yet I felt this tremendous pressure to keep bringing in a paycheck, even though a part of me had really died to that profession.
Right.
So the most compelling aspect for me in the Lifeline program is what another part of what happens there is that you find out that sometimes that these people that you think you are rescuing are actually parts of yourself.
Woo! I love it. Yes.
Yeah. Right. So that all of us have many dimensions to our personalities. Some of them have been buried for many, many years because they're holding trauma, or they're holding great disappointment or grief that we just don't know how to deal with. And so we shove them off into a dark corner, and we say to that part of ourselves, "You deal with that. I can't do it. Can't take care of it." And then we forget all about it.
Right.
And what happens in the Lifeline program is that when you start these rescue missions, without knowing it, sometimes you will encounter parts of yourself that need to be rescued. And that was the really key part for me, was that I began to recognize parts of myself that I could have sworn to you were not part of who I am. One of the interesting things about being a pastor is you get to go through this amazing process of showing only part of your personality, and that's the side that's really bright and spiritual and wonderful and good. And in the Lifeline program, I began to realize that there's this whole other aspect of who I am that I had been rejecting that I didn't want to show to anybody or even acknowledge to myself. And it wasn't until I started to enter into that and to deal with that I began to move into a much greater wholeness and a much greater understanding of who I am from this total self perspective. And if it hadn't been for that program, I don't think that I ever could have left the ministry. But it went, and I credit the Lifeline program with the ability that it gave me to recognize these deeper, darker, maybe shadow aspects of who I am, and the need to pay attention to that. And if it hadn't been for the Lifeline program, I don't think I could have done that.
Well, that's a strong, you know, recommendation, because I have been speaking about that as well on Facebook, that like I'm getting a sense that the oil rig in the Gulf of Mexico, I got a hit that the oil coming up from the core of the planet is about our darkness coming up, and that it's not that it's coming up to take over the world, but it's coming up to be acknowledged, blessed, and released.
Right.
Because
and that's
it,
so
can't
profound.
It can't be stuffed anymore. It just can't be stuffed anymore. It's almost like it's filled. It needs to come out because part of the next step of you know, an enlightened society is no more secrets.
Ooh,
so we have
stuff.
To have compassion for self. We've all done dark things, and you know,
mm-hmm.
it's not about you don't be proud of them, but you acknowledge that it was. We kind of came here to experience our dark, helping us really understand our light. I mean, it played off of each other. It something had to be dark, you know. And I once had a teacher that said, the dark is one of the most compassionate aspects of who we are because the dark is the aspect that took on everything we didn't like about ourselves and
mm-hmm.
what compassion it would take to do such a task.
That is beautifully said. You may remember that early on in this conversation that I was talking about one of the aspects of our graduates as being having compassion towards oneself and
yes.
towards others. And what you've just talked about is a really key component to that whole thing, because when you recognize the aspects of yourself that you don't want to acknowledge and you do begin to acknowledge them, that can give you much greater compassion to who you are. And once you do that, then it's much easier to express that compassion toward the people in the world around you. And that's really where we need to go as a community, a worldwide community. So
oh,
that's
great.
Really powerful
yeah.
stuff that you're talking about. And Carl Jung used to talk about the shadow side and the importance of it, accessing that, because there's another very important component of this shadow side. When we start to drill into it, using your metaphor.
Again, I love it. Okay.
That releases a new form of energy that is intensely creative.
Yes.
And that it gives us the gift of reconnecting us with what our true mission and purpose is in life. And that makes all the difference in the world. And I don't think you can get there unless you pass through this period of accessing the dark side or the darkness or the shadow side.
Oh, God, I am enjoying this conversation.
Oh, I do.
Yeah, I'm wholeheartedly, once again, agree. Absolutely. Because I also got a hit that there is an organism, and when the time is right, this organism will not only eat the oil in the ocean and excrete like a protein or an enzyme that will be beneficial for the ocean, it will happen literally in the twinkling of an eye. It will heal itself in an alchemized experience that it will be almost simultaneous. It'll just happen once it helps us recognize it's awakening our compassion.
Yes, I think everything is possible at this point, and that certainly is something that is possible, right?
Yeah. Well, I believe that the Earth is a hologram of us. You know, as our beliefs become, you know, more expanded and clearly more compassionate, you know, instead of the viruses being, you know, the Nile or, you know, the swine flu, the virus will be a virus of love.
Mm-hmm.
It will spread, you know, the same way. It just will be the benefit instead of, at the moment, what it appears to be the detriment.
Mm-hmm. I think as you move into this work and you begin to realize that the boundaries of who we are as individuals really do not end at our skin,
yes.
that we, in fact, are interacting all the time from many, many different levels with the environment around us, then you realize that who you are is deeply connected with the world around you. And the world is not a dead place. It is something that is intensely alive and always communicating with us and is the sort of the showcase for a spiritual underpinning that is truly radiant. I remember hearing an American Indian talking years ago, and he was saying something like, you know, when we look at that mountain over there, we don't just see a mountain. We see something that is a spiritual essence, and that is integral to the way that we see the world. And I think that maybe they've been holding that as a gift for us that we are more and more going to be discovering in Western culture.
Oh, absolutely. Beautifully stated, and I could not again. I mean, I should just be hitting the applause button because I just agree wholeheartedly. No, they have, and if anyone took some detriment, oh my God. But, you know, this is something interesting that Alex Collier brought up. The American government made a treaty with the Greys, and within, you know, moments of the Greys getting what they wanted, which was access to people, they broke the treaty. And Alex Collier says, but of course, you know, this is, we're not a victim of the Greys. All you have to do is look at our history on how we treated the Native Americans to see how we would bring that into our experience.
Yes. So we create, you're saying that we created a situation in which there's retribution and accountability for what we've done in the past.
Because the intelligence behind all of this is about balance. It's always been
exactly.
about balance.
Right.
Even in our out of balance, it's balanced.
Right.
That's my belief. That's my belief.
Right. And that's where the impulse to get rid of evil or to destroy evil is so misguided, because evil is in the eye of the beholder.
Exactly.
And really, you can't get rid of it, because it's an aspect of darkness that is a part of our world, and we just put the label evil on it, and so we deny ourselves the gift that it has to offer to us. And
exactly.
in denying it, you know, it grows in strength, and then it gets out of balance, and that's why we have so much of the suffering that's involved in the world right now. And so as a humanity, I think that the time has come for us to seek that balance between darkness and light and see the gift that each has to offer.
Well, and the Monroe Institute is literally, you know, it's like the college of enlightenment. You know, to get a taste of it. Because the fact that it can be done through technology is, from my perspective, like, you know, I remember when my girlfriend, I was telling her to plan a trip for me to swim with the dolphins. She goes, do you want them penned or do you want them wild? And I was like, oh, no question. I want them wild. And she goes,
right.
I can't guarantee an experience. And I was like, I didn't ask you to guarantee an experience. Just guarantee me a plane trip in a room where people take me out to do this or whatever. Now,
right.
because I've done the work with the Holosync, I knew I'd have an experience.
Mm-hmm.
You need that. We need the confidence to get through it's not just years, it's lifetimes of programming us to believing, you know, we're just our body, or worse, less than, or, you know, the original sin. You know, pick any one of these belief systems that I believe are, you know, just so beyond obsolete and antiquity. Or, well, you know what I mean. There you go. That's the word I'm looking for. That these technologies, sound will get you there. Sound will get you there, guaranteed. It will, what you experience, it can't guarantee, but it can experience the brainwave. It can experience the doorway. You can walk through it and experience whatever you want, or you know, whatever is divine for your experience.
Right. The thing I think I want to make everybody aware of is that you know, this doesn't work for everybody. It works for the vast majority of people who come through our programs. But, you know, I would be remiss to give the impression that it's 100%. Out of 24 people, we might have maybe one or two who walk away being disappointed with the experience. But
wow.
for the rest of them, it's truly life-changing.
Exactly.
Those people
okay.
who don't find what they're looking for, maybe there's something else that they have to explore yet in their lives. And so we're not a panacea, and I wouldn't want to give anybody that impression. However, as they say, we hear so often people saying to us, this has been the most important week of my life, where my life absolutely changed when I came to your program. So we have a great, great success rate, but, you know, it doesn't fit for everybody.
Nothing's flawless, right? There's always, you know, there's always that, what do they call the blind rule or whatever, where it can never be. Right, there's nothing that's a panacea. Nothing is 100% for everything. But sound, you know, it's like, I mean, I tried the meditating before this, you know, the breathing and the
mm-hmm.
mantras. I tried, and I, for the life of me, could not shut my mind down long enough to know that there was things beyond my mind. I just
right.
could not do that.
I'm the same way. Right. I'm the same
where
way.
The, you know, hemisync, and just so you know, the reason why I stopped the hemisync, it was giving me headaches, because I believed it was starting me, I was probably, I'm sure, radical, say it isn't so Goldie, where I might have, instead of starting at Gateway Voyage 1, I might have said, oh, I can handle 3. I don't remember. I just remember, you know, the technology absolutely turned me on. And I have a feeling my Holosync experience will help me when I'm at the Institute, just in the sense of, you know, the brain has already been, you know, I am whole brain functioning at this point, and
right.
also falling asleep with headphones on. Oh, I've been doing that for 10 years.
I would say you're probably primed at this point. One of the things that we always advise people is to make sure that it's not turned up very loud. This is one of those things where louder is not better, and sometimes
exactly.
people will have it on
yeah.
too loud, and that can cause headaches, or they can get ungrounded because of the experience. And so we help people to learn how to ground themselves more effectively in between the experiences, and that seems to help quite a bit.
Nice. I'm also very much looking forward to the community of this. I've introduced a few people to Holosync, and they would do like one level and say, are you out of your mind? No way. Why would I invite chaos? And I'm like going, okay, it's not for everybody. I understand that. And then I go, you know, and then under my breath, I'm like, just look for the, you know, you're going to get a fist to your face from left field, and you're not going to know, because one way or another, chaos experience, you know, we experience chaos one way or another. I personally say, let it be organized. Then I don't have to be afraid that someone's going to pull the rug out from underneath me.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
But I've had other people go, are you kidding me? I'm working my best to not have chaos in my life. And, you know, of course, the first words out of my mouth are, Ian, how's that working for you?
And how do they respond?
There's a lot of denial out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're like, it's working fine. And I'm like,
yeah.
you know, I bet you if I had you under a lie detector or, you know, Wonder Woman's magical gold belt, I would get a more accurate answer to that. But I'm never here. I don't want to make people uncomfortable. I want them to be aware that there really is a technology that, yes, indeed. Because, I mean, I can remember second year of Holosyncing having a nervous breakdown at Stop and Shop because I didn't know if I wanted milk 1%, 2%, or whole milk. Mm. I mean, I just lost my marbles in the middle of the aisle. And you know, and I'm not saying that people, I don't want people to think that hemi-sync, you lose your marbles like that, because it's clear there's a support system. And Bill Harris sets that kind of stuff up with the Holosync. Again, I was doing it 3 times a day. You're only supposed to do it once a day. I just tend to be an extremist. That's who I am.
Right.
And I accept the responsibility of the extremist while doing these techniques, because, you know, I did inevitably go, Goldie, will you do it once a day? Stop making life completely fall apart when it really doesn't have to. And it's like, because I always felt like for the longest time I was missing, you know, it's interesting, I was missing my mark. And it's interesting because the word sin means to miss your mark.
Right, exactly.
And when I changed my name to Golden Hawk, my birth name was Cindy. And one of the reasons why I changed it is I literally hit a space in time where I went, I can no longer respond affirming when someone says, hey, Sin.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everybody called me Sin. You know, I mean, that's a natural, you know, it's a term of endearment to shorten a name, you know. And I just remember consciously going, and it wasn't about sin from the religious point of view. It was sin from the archery term, meaning to miss your mark. I went,
right.
I can't affirm that anymore. But just changing my name, it still took a few years to affirm in my life, just do the technique the way the technique's supposed to be done. Relax.
There is some wisdom to that. There is some wisdom in moderation. But again, I wouldn't ever try to tell another person how they should go about something. But one of the things that's important to the work that we do at the Monroe Institute is that we feel it's very important in between experiences for people to come back to being grounded.
Yeah.
So that what we find is that if people don't get grounded between experiences, then they kind of, burn out or wash out in some way, and they feel themselves blocked But if you're coming back and reconnecting with the earth in between, reconnecting with people, drinking lots of water, taking showers, taking walks in the woods, and connecting with nature, that what that does is it's the analogy that we use. It's like bouncing on a trampoline. The more you come down, and the deeper you go into the trampoline, the higher you can go on the next bounce.
Oh, but nice.
But if you don't ever come down, then you can get things like headaches, and you can get disoriented. And so we've learned through the years that this balance between going out and exploring and then coming back and being fully present into this world is a very important movement that's part and parcel of the spiritual journey.
Paul, that is just... that is sound and ground advice or you know, how to walk consciously in a multidimensional experience, you know, and not lose your marbles at the grocery counter.
How are you going to know this, you know, until somebody explains it to you? And, you know, I think the way you did it probably was right for you.
Well, it's how I do everything, and right, and because
right.
I burnt out, but I never stopped, because that's
mm-hmm.
just, that's my nature, and, but I love the idea that, listen, that's my nature, and partly why I, you know, a good friend of mine says, you always know the pioneers because they have the arrows in their back. You know, I'm willing to get shot at. I have a thick skin on many things, even though I have a tremendous sensitivity on things. But you know, the beauty of not being quote-unquote the first or second to go through these experiences is it's organized and it's graceful. It seems grace can be much more a part of the experience than necessarily, you know, the pioneers.
Both have their place, absolutely. You know,
yeah.
You're a pioneer. Robert Monroe was a pioneer. And then there are those who are able to structure the experience for those who aren't pioneers. And I think both are absolutely essential, because we have both types in our society. And so we, you know, we want to be responsive to all both of those and all.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm finding, I think, no, I'm not. Never mind. I was going to say, I'm finding that, you know, I do enjoy grace. Actually, you know, it's interesting. For many years, my main goal was patience. I mean, that was like, I lived and breathed. Okay, I realize I'm seeking patience, so you're going to put me in traffic jams. You're going to put me on hold. You know, people aren't going to pay me. Things of that nature where I have to have patience.
Mm-hmm.
I can honestly tell you that I have transcended patience, because once you get a space that you're beyond space and time, from a whole experience that came to me almost as a packet of information, I realize now that the space and my focus point now is compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting about compassion is now I have to be dealing with very cranky people, belief systems that drive me crazy.
mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I tell people all the time when, you know, they're like, yeah, I'm a spiritual person, I shouldn't have to be going through this. And it was like, what are you, you know, because if they tell me, you know, I had to wait 10 minutes for a 15-mile freight train, I was like, have you intended recently to be patient? They're like, how'd you know? And it's like, oh, well, how did I know? Because that's your opportunity, my friend.
You know,
not brain surgery here, people. We're creating all of it.
That's right. Well, it's very interesting when you think about when you travel into non-physical dimensions and experiences some of the realms that are available to us there.
Right.
You can move into realms that are pretty incredibly blissful in a lot of ways. And
right.
If you think for a moment that maybe that's where we came from, and we gave that up to come into this world with all of its frustrations and all of its heartache and its grief and its testing and challenges and whatnot, you know, you think, why would we do that voluntarily? Well, I think we do it voluntarily because this is a school that can teach us things that we probably can't learn any other way.
Exactly.
And even though it is frustrating and grieving and all of those things, there is something far more precious that we're gaining from an educational standpoint for our spirit, that I think it's just one of those offerings in the universe that you know, this Earth experience that allows us to expand in ways that because of the very constrictions that we have, it expands us at another level that must be tremendously valuable for some reason that we would voluntarily come into this experience. So I've begun to really look at what happens here from that perspective that you were just talking about, that you know, there's something really valuable here. So many people want to leave this earth, and they say, "Oh, I'm going to make sure this is the last time I have to be incarnated." Well, maybe that's missing the point. Maybe what is going on here is not a punishment, but it's something that we really have to treasure when viewed from that larger perspective.
Oh my God! Okay, wait a minute. I have to do this.
Okay.
God bless Paul. That was awesome.
You're nuts. Oh, you're nuts. Had a fun one. That's great. Thank you for that.
That is so so on the money. Because, you know, once we get that, we came from perfection.
Yeah.
So if we came from perfection by choice, by absolute conscious choice, there's got, you know, because, well, again, that's that whole shift that it's, we're not a sin and we haven't been thrown into the, you know, the devil's den because we made a mistake with God or whatever those kooky beliefs are, that we can really start to exercise our wings and say, okay, wait a minute, you know, in the resistance, I am still creating all of this. I mean, I was in a car chase about 6 months ago. Paul, I flew. I mean, the car left the ground. And the only way I know this is when I went back to see where we had driven. I went through stone. If I didn't fly, I became multidimensional. And it wasn't just me. It was another young lady sitting next to me. We went through stone walls, tree trunks, garbage pails, all in second gear, and nothing happened to the car.
Do you drive like this all the time?
No, only when, in a brief thought, I was helping. No, let me be fair about this. I was trying to control a young girlfriend of mine by removing her from a what I considered a negative relationship. And her ex-boyfriend and 13 of her friends, now these are all people from 18 to 23 years old.
Oh, great, yeah.
Came to tell me they felt otherwise. You know, I was the heroic liberator that was so far into control mode because this whole dynamic was about control. So I have sincerely suspended, you know, not suspended, embodied that. I took that. I said, okay, let's look at that. I mean, because it's funny, I kept saying he was controlling her, and here I was doing the exact same thing. And so it's like, this is, again, what we can do with our dark side by embracing it. Because even though that was truly, I mean, I've had some pretty scary nights in my life. You can't live an extreme, quote, pioneer life without having some wild stories to tell.
You bet.
And the fact that I had that story, you know, this is only 6 months ago, because it is, as much as it was scary being chased down the road by 13 cars, there is the magic aspect of either we became multidimensional, we flew, or a dragon or some kind of animal or being came under the car and got us to where we had to go, which was essentially surrounded by cops. Because in my mind, I had in my head, don't stop until you're surrounded by cops. Don't stop until you're surrounded by cops. And it was no coincidence that that's exactly the creation when the car stopped. Within 5 minutes, I was surrounded by cops.
So what did they do when they got there?
Sorry. Okay, yeah, I can share. Okay, well, essentially what happened was the boyfriend who was in front of us and the best friend, her best friend and her boyfriend who were behind us, the boyfriend took off and didn't come into the gas station that I pulled in immediately, but the girlfriend and the boyfriend behind us followed us. The cop walked up to them and goes, "What are you doing?" And like, you know, an idiot, he goes, "We're following them," pointing to my car. So they cuffed him. Then, like 15 minutes later, the boyfriend shows up without a car, just coming up to the gas station. And so my girlfriend, my friend, screams to the cops, hey, that's my boyfriend. That's the one who tried to run us off the road. Then he got arrested. You know, it was one of those, you know, first of all, if I was going to be a criminal, I wouldn't be a stupid criminal. That's the first of all. Anything you're going to do, try and do it with a little bit of intelligence. These
You want to be the Bill Gates of criminality. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I always used to say, I mean, I will honestly admit, since this is, you know, since I'm talking to a, you know, an ex-Presbyterian priest.
Oh, yeah, right.
In my darkest days, I have done criminal activity.
No.
I have never been arrested for criminal activity.
Mm.
And, I, you know, interesting enough, I'm going to say this, and not as an advocacy for criminal activity, but I have always had an insight, even without Holosync, that there are ways to create on this planet that which you want in a harmony. Like, because for many years, I used to recognize that the bad guys were the bankers. I mean, I clearly saw that. So there was a point in time in my life that I went bankrupt with, from a very conscious point of view. In other words, they started sending me checks and I started the credit cards. Mm-hmm. And I started cashing $10,000 checks left and right, knowing it was either going to be bankruptcy or, you know, something was going to land out of the you know, I was going to open up a briefcase and there was going to be $1 million in it and I'd pay off all my bills.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people have had, you know, adverse reactions when I tell them that. But the 3 years that I lived without working by living on the credit cards were the 3 years that I went through my initial homelessing period because I was unable to really hold a job. As I said, I was losing my marbles over milk choices.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm not advocating that you go bankrupt intentionally, but ironically, that was in 2003, and here we are, you know, 7 years later, like, you know, 90% of the country went bankrupt. I didn't choose that. So it was just a matter of kind of reading I would never take money from a person. I've been a nanny for 20 years. I don't snoop. I don't steal. I don't, your life is yours. I take care of your children. I you know what I mean? I don't need to know your personal, I don't need to know what's in your, beside your nightstand drawer. You know, to feel like a better person, you know, I take care of your kids. Whatever's going on in your life, that's your stuff, and whatever you want to share, I'll listen to. But, you know what I mean? Because I used to tell people I have integrity, and when they would hear certain details of my life, they were like, no, you don't. And I'm like, just because I know how to play the game doesn't mean I don't have integrity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I personally saw that there was corruption going throughout the banks, and it was like, well, listen, I'm going to utilize that corruption for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I do still have the bankruptcy as a, you know, that's on my record or whatever. And my whole goal is I don't care because I never plan on owning. I shouldn't say I never plan on owning. Until we have some sort of new world order. let me rephrase that. New world order. You know, if enlightenment comes and when it comes, I do believe it is coming, actually. I think, actually, at that point, it won't even be about owning. It'll be about stewardship and things of that nature. I take very good care of that which is in my stewardship, but I don't need to. I'm happy renting. I mean, I don't feel any less of a person because I don't have a mortgage. That's not part of, it's never been a part of who my identity is. My identity has always been about my soul and my soul's contribution to what I can give. Have you ever heard the term heoki?
No, that's a new one on me.
Heoki is it's a Native American term, and it's like you teach the light through the dark.
I see.
And nothing resonates deeper with me than that. Because, you know, I was very happy to come into this lifetime and truly dive into dark spaces. I mean, truly dark spaces and come out of them radiating.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because I didn't experience the dark. It's just simply having an awareness, which I'm sure, you know, you and your students, you start having an awareness to a truth that makes you, not makes you, that's a bad term, that offers you different choices that other people, the norm, might say, well, you're just crazy. But when you have the perspective that you have, you don't feel crazy. You just feel like you're making a choice based on the awareness and the perception that you that you've been granted, or that you have.
You know, I was mentioning before Skip Atwater, who I work with, amongst many other people at the Institute. But, you know, every once in a while, something will happen, or you know, we'll be talking about some person's life, and I'll say something like, isn't that a shame? Or that's just really sad. And Skip just kind of looks in that wistful way, and he says, well, there are many different ways you can choose to go through this life.
Yeah.
And I think that that's so accurate, because every one of them is another learning opportunity for us. And
exactly.
I think that's part of the cornucopia that is offered in this lifetime. And as I think, getting back to where we kind of started this portion of the conversation, you know, this there is something very attractive about that from off-planet perspective. And
yeah.
So that there is a real desire in a lot of cases to come for that learning here. And as one person said, and I love this line, he says, we didn't fall from grace, we jumped.
Exactly. And you can really feel the power of that subtle difference.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, because one, you're a creator. One, you're a victor. One, you're a victim.
Right.
You know, I mean, I have not always been this confident in my life, and yet I've always had a gall about me.
Mm.
But it wasn't until I started understanding, my place, I don't know how to explain it. I wish more people would be willing to make mistakes, because I think they'd see how much more they could be in that experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I'm an extremist, I have taken risks my whole life. That's the nature of, you know, doing something to the extreme.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was in first grade the first time I ever cut school. I mean, that's 6 years old. 6 years old. It was my plan to hide under my pool table while my parents left. I came out. I opened up a can of SpaghettiOs all by myself. I was very proud of that. Sat home and watched cartoons, because first grade was already, they were becoming so repetitive. It's like, I know what you're teaching me. I don't need to be there.
Yeah, that is... That is one of the problems with being precocious, isn't it? You're kind of ahead of the game, and the game gets pretty boring. Einstein.
Oh, wait, go ahead. What about Einstein?
Well, Einstein was, I think that he practically failed out of school. He got such bad marks, but, you know, the guy was just bored to tears.
Exactly.
And again, that's when you're only speaking to one small part of the broad spectrum of who we are as people, yeah, of course it's going to be boring to those people who have a sense of that broader spectrum. So
exactly.
Good for you for being bored and cutting school.
Well, and you know what they say about, now you have children, have you found that your children reflect parts of you that you might not have wanted to, like the shadow?
Oh, yeah.
I don't have my own children.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm like, if I have kids that reflect my shadow, oh, my God.
Oh,
and, but, you know,
your kids can drive you crazier than anybody else, because, you know, you'll be talking to them, and all of a sudden you become the parent that you, your own parent,
exactly.
And you start saying things that you swore you'd never say, because it was so offensive to you as a child. But then your own children bring it out of you, and you simply can't help it. But, you know, that's also part of the glory, I guess, of parenthood too is that because your children can get to you at a deep, deep level, and you can get to them at a deep, deep level, in any other relationship you'd normally walk away from it. But because they're your children, and there is this underlying love that cannot be broken, you don't walk away, and you sit there in the crucible of the pain of that moment until you actually learn something from it. And I there were so many times in as a parent where I was just wondering, what in the world am I doing? You know, I feel like I've just ruined my relationship with my kids forever. There's no way they're ever going to forgive me. And that, and yet somehow, you know, the years go by and they grow up and then they become your best friends and you just love them all the more. And so it's a miracle too. You know, it's really a wild ride. That's all I can say.
It is. It is. Well, I figured if I was ever to have kids, I think they're going to grow up to be Catholic priests. Because that would be the dark side of me. I'm so glad you got that joke, because I'm like, I don't know if he's going to get this. I hope I can say this and he gets this.
That's right. You know, you can't get too far away from it, you know. That's the same way with me. You know, having been a pastor for 15 years, it's, you know, I keep thinking that part of my life is behind me. And yet, like I said, just a couple of months ago, I find myself giving a Monroe Institute program for a group of Presbyterians. Now, that's kind of, it really is. You can't ever really get too far away from what your past has been, because that's been something that has contributed to who you are, and it's a vital part of your existence. So it's another part of the mystery of this world.
Yeah, but it's a magical, because I think you really do. I think it was Neil Donald Walsh, he wrote in one of the books, the Conversation with God books, within the first three, that he was so amazed when he looked back on his life, how everything had a purpose to him in once he did the Conversation with God books, and how, you know, he worked somewhere and that helped him to become a speaker to, you know, multi-ethnical and multi-diverse groups. And this part had a thing to help him learn to speak, and that it looked random in his life when it was happening. And yet as life went on, it coalesced into this, you know, I call the jigsaw puzzle of our life, where, you know, at some points you find that middle piece where it's not that it's the whole puzzle, but an area just, you put the piece in, and it's just like, oh, there's the picture. I get it. Oh, my God. I get my life. Like, that. What an experience to have that.
But until that happens, you know, the pieces are all just laying there, the jigsaw puzzle. They don't make any sense. It looks like chaos. We were talking about chaos before.
Right.
But you come to that point in life where, in retrospect, you can look back and say, oh, now I get it. Oh, that's,
I don't believe it's the journey for everyone to, the potential is absolutely there for everyone to have that experience where the picture comes together.
I think so. I don't think that there are really too many accidents in this world anymore.
Right. I agree. I am so, so very delighted that to make your acquaintance, Paul Rademacher. Truly glad.
Well, I feel the same, Goldie, for sure. And I do hope that you get an opportunity to come and visit us at the Institute, and make sure that I know about it beforehand.
I will. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Be there when you're
and
there.
To be honest, I will make the, because I was going to do the, one of the things you have where it's not a prerequisite is, out of body exploration intensive.
Oh, yeah, that's with William Buhlman, and that's something that's brand new. William Buhlman is really one of the most, the world's foremost authorities on techniques for getting out of body. Let me put some context to that. A lot of people associate the Monroe Institute with out-of-body experiences because Robert Monroe was the one who coined that phrase, and his books are about out-of-body experiences. But the reality of what we're about is much more than that. And so we try to tone down the expectation that people are going to have an out-of-body experience, because out-of-body is just one small slice of a very large pie of possibilities for human consciousness and possibilities for what you experience at the Institute. And if you get focused on out-of-body, you can miss so much else that's going on. So we try to actually de-emphasize that aspect of our programs. But these new programs with William Buhlman, it is the focus. And William Buhlman has not been associated with the Institute up to this point in time. He just recently went through our Gateway Voyage program so he could get a sense of what we do and how we do it. And as a way of preparing then for offering his program through our institute, we're very excited about that, and that will be the focus of what's happening. He will present a number of different techniques for getting out of body, and you know, we'll see how it goes.
You know, that's interesting that I would pick the one program that's not TMI. but I'll be honest with you, after meditating on it, and because I have the 1200, I don't have the 1900. I would be able to create that in, you know, if I hang on and, you know, let my little investment grow through work and investing. But I knew I would know it after the show positively, but I had a really good sense about it. I was like, no, I think I want to do this gateway, and then I want to do the next one. And I like, for the first time in my life, I'm finding I'm resonating with structure that I have not normally structure, to be quite honest, scared the hell out of me, because by nature I sensed that they were structuring out my imagination. I knew that. That's why in first grade I skipped. It's like you're pounding my left brain and my right brain, and I'm left-handed. My right brain was my strong side. And truth be told, nobody wanted to hear nothing about, you know, the creativeness of, you know, why 6 plus 6 equals 37. but with that being said, the Monroe Institute truly is a structure for enlightenment. It's like, it is a place I can come home and say, I'm not afraid of structure here. I'm not only not afraid. I'm going to do Gateway first. And I think it might be my my destiny to become, you know, a practitioner. I don't know, but I know you got to start where you start, and where I'm going to start is Gateway, because I definitely believe, too, that I got headaches from I played it too loud, and I don't even know if I started with one. I might have started someplace else. So, but I know the Holosync at this point has prepped me that, you know, I'm excited to sleep in a bed in a box.
think in terms of what we do is simply providing tools. I mean, we provide some structure and context so that you have a sense of safety. But within that, you have a tremendous amount of freedom in terms of what you can do and what you want to do. And I'll say it again, and what I said earlier in the program, we really encourage people to follow their own intuition. And if the exercise is getting in the way of that, then discard the exercise or discard the tool that's not working for you. Do what works for you.
That's an exquisite, exquisite share. We have a couple of minutes left. Is there anything that you wanted to promote or make sure that got spoken about? Or
we've covered a lot of ground in these 2 hours, and I've really enjoyed it, Goldie. It's been just a great to be with you. I would encourage people who are interested to go to our website, which again is monroeinstitute.org. And I want to emphasize the .org because we are a nonprofit organization. Our reason for being is service to humanity. We take that very seriously, and we see that as our whole purpose. And even though we have to keep the money coming in order to keep that service going, service is our genuine focus, and you'll see that everybody who is there is there for that purpose as well. So I want people to understand that that's the perspective that we approach this whole thing from, and we're just there to offer service to them.
Paul, if they don't get that from speaking or from hearing you, the brick wall is, you know. You truly are such an awesome representative of service and humankind and compassion. And I'm honestly not trying, I'm not saying this, you know, to butter you up, you know, and then when we hang up go, hey, can I have $50 off on my program? I'm not saying that. I mean that. Because I meet a lot of people that are pontificators. When I meet the genuine article, I can't help but share it. I really can't, because I recognize a true radiance. You cannot not recognize it. It's felt. This radio show will radiate for everybody that listens to it, whether they go to the Monroe Institute or not. The essence of compassion, the essence of true service, the essence of us genuinely just sharing what we're both passionate about. And I think that's pretty hot. I really do.
Thank you so much for that. And thank you for what you're doing too, Goldie. It's just great to have people out there who are advancing human consciousness. And that as a nonprofit, our mission really is to make an impact on human consciousness from a global perspective. And you're a part of that as well.
Back at you, because I'm nonprofit too. Exactly. All right. I absolutely adore you, Paul Rademacher. And the book is, where did I do with the book? Help me with, A Spiritual Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe. You can, the link is right on my episode page, which will take you right to Amazon. You are absolutely a doll. I will speak with Sarah to bring you back on, because you're cool being a frequent guest, right?
I am, absolutely.
You rock, Paul. You just rock. Thank you, thank you, thank you. It is truly, truly a delight to speak with you, always. And when I'm coming down, which will probably be, 3 months from now, May, June, July, August, so my next check is September, somewhere around there, I'm coming down. So
great.
I'll make sure, I'll let Sarah know to either connect us or, you know, you will know, because, I mean, you're not a part of the program, but we can do a shake and a hug, right? I mean, we can clearly,
oh,
you know.
Absolutely, and my office is right there, too, and people stop in all the time in the middle
awesome.
Of programs. And,
awesome. Oh, definitely.
My daughter took the program, and she kept stopping in every afternoon, so.
Outstanding. Well, and I would love to meet, you know, your wife from the book. Whatever, you know, maybe have dinner one night or something, or I don't know how the whole thing works, but I'm open to all of it. And insulted by none of it. You know, whatever happens, it's all beautiful. It's all beautiful.
Right.
Yeah. All right. You have an amazing evening. Thank you so much for sharing with me and the audience. You're amazing.
Thank you.
All right. Talk soon, my friend. Bye now.